Cruise is on his way to end this podcast. Everyone, run!
Hello, and welcome to Super Hell, a.k.a. the Mystery Spotcast, a show where two recovering Supernatural fans subject themselves to a rewatch so no one else ever has to watch Supernatural again. I'm Claudia. My pronouns are she, her. You can find me on social media at Kaludia Says, K-A-L-U-D-I-A Says.
And I am Ollie. I use any pronouns, and you can find me on social media at Ollie Fresh. It's fresh with a P-H. Whew. So these two episodes are both actually, I'm going to say it, both very good.
They're both some of Supernatural's best.
No, genuinely. I forgot how good the last couple episodes of season one are.
Yeah, season one, kind of a slay.
She's kind of serving. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, this is the part where they were like, we're getting into the plot, girlies.
Yeah, they're like, oh no, we wrote 16 episodes of a show and we forot about the plot. So well, they're putting it in
now. These were
the
days when, like, seasons of TV were, like, 23 episodes long. Like, you had time. You had time to do things.
Can you imagine I know you had mentioned, I think in the last episode, the Winchesters being an HBO Max original.
Please.
And something that I've been thinking about is a 10 episode structure for this show. That would be, because here's the thing, I fear they wouldn't cut out any of the stories, they just make them a lot shorter
and much worse.
Much worse,
if that's possible.
I love the streaming wars. I am gonna get us started with season one, episode 16, Shadow. Not to be confused with Shadow the Hedgehog, which
Sonic 2 has come to Paramount Plus on streaming.
Sonic 2 has spoilers for Sonic 2. This episode of Supernatural.
Is Meg Shadow the Hedgehog? Not clickbait. Someone draw Shadow as Meg quickly.
I would love to see how someone would do that. Just an unholy amalgamation of Shadow the Hedgehog and Meg from Supernatural.
It would just be those bangs.
The blonde, blunt bangs.
And then holding the little cup.
But it's just Shadow.
Yeah.
So true. The cold open starts. Chicago, Illinois. There's this girl. She is listening to her iPod as she is walking down a very dark city street.
R.I.P. the iPod. R.I.P.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, love.
Rest in pod. Rest, iPod. R.I.P. That's what that stands for.
She's walking down the city streets of Chicago. It is Vancouver.
It is absolutely Vancouver. It is so clearly not Chicago. I digress. Her iPod dies, so she takes her headphones out, and she's like, that was weird. She turns around and there's this shadowy figure following her and it's going like, Meredith, Meredith. So her name's Meredith. Spoiler alert.
Damn, she's like, you spoiled the whole fucking thing. God damn.
I spoiled the cold open. I'm so sorry. She starts booking it. She is like, uh-uh. She gets into her apartment, turns around, locks the door, sets her alarm system. She puts her stuff down. She gets a beer from the fridge. And then she goes and starts, like, listening to some of her voicemails that she has, and it's all people like, oh my gosh, hey Meredith, what's up? What's really funny about this is that we later find out that she is a waitress, and I'm like, she has a quite large apartment for someone living in Chicago on a waitress's salary in 2006.
Like, God, I wish we could go back.
Do you want to go back to 2006?
I mean, clearly, at least it's before the 2008 recession. Like, clearly, yeah, maybe she could afford an apartment that large. Also, they're in Vancouver, they're in Canada, so her healthcare's paid for.
Okay, but in fiction, they are in Chicago.
Yeah, that's true. So. But still, she probably could have afforded a better apartment, you know. The shit's bad now.
As she's listening to her voicemails, this, like, shadow, like, literal shadow on the wall comes up behind her. And is, like, in her house. And we see a shot that is, like, her shadow and the shadow of this thing. And it just, like, puts its hand through her chest and rips her right open.
Okay, but the line before that being, like, one of her friends on the voicemail being, like,
I know that guy ripped your heart out last time, and then immediately the shadow on the wall rips her heart out. I was like, okay, well done. A little on the nose, but well done.
I love a little on the nose, especially in the genre of horror. I think sometimes a little on the nose symbolism, I enjoy it.
That's the tagline of this podcast.
Some heavy-handed symbolism can go a long way. 1 week later, Sam and Dean roll up in front of her house, and they are dressed in these coveralls with their names on them. They're dressed like the security alarm repairmen, and they're there to investigate what happened. And I am obsessed because in the car, they have this conversation where Dean is like, we find out that whenever they dress up in costumes, it is Sam's idea. Because Dean is like, this is so stupid. I feel like a stupid little theater kid. Hey, what was that show that you did, Sam, when you were in high school? And he's like, oh, Our Town.
Canonical theater kid Sam Winchester. It said, okay, quickly, what musicals was he? Was he like the one straight man in that's his high school?
That's a great question. I do feel like he I don't know why I think the Music Man.
I also think if I don't know, I guess he was in high school like in the like late 90s, early 2000s, whatever.
Cats? Sam Winchester? Rum Tum Tug, Rum Tum Tugger, Sam Winchester?
No, get out of here!
Is he not a Mr. Mistopheles Kinney?
No, unfortunately, I do believe that he is a Rent stan. He's like, actually, I like Tick, Tick, Boom better, which Jonathan Larson, and he's a canonical a Tick, Tick, Boom fan and a Jonathan Larson apologist.
Dear anyway. Evan Hansen stands.
Dear Evan Hansen. He's like,
Dean, I don't understand why everyone's being so mean about this movie.
I can't.
Ben Platt's an amazing performer.
No. This is also an iconic outfit. Like, this shot of them walking is, like, it's used in a lot of GIFs a lot. And it's also, like, I know that people use this GIF to show, like, how fucking tall Sam is all the time. This outfit is, like, one of the, like, iconic brothers' outfits for some fucking reason. And then Dean also says the line, you think credit card fraud's easy? And
yeah, because he's like... Sam, these outfits that we've bought, like, you're acting like we're in, like, high school theater and we're getting these little outfits so that we can sneak in. Dad never needed this. And he's like, these are hard-earned money. We're spending hard-earned money on this. And Sam is like, oh, whose money?
it's kind of...
And Dean's like, mine. You think credit card scams are easy?
Yeah. Truly, the banter between them in these two episodes is actually quite stellar.
It's so good.
You were like, oh, they really do love each other. But yeah. Also, they're little annoying little boys.
They are very brotherly in these episodes, and I adore it. So they go up to the apartment, and they are talking to the landlady, and she is like, oh, your guys' alarm system sucks ass, because it was going off, and... She was in here dead for, like, days before anyone found her because she didn't show up to work. So then I came in and she was dead. And she was, like, cut up into pieces.
Literal rest in pieces.
Literally. Literal.
Also, there's a random transphobic joke here.
Yeah, it was... I mean, to be fair, it was the early 2000s.
Yeah, there's this meme online that's like, you know, when you're watching something that you quite enjoy from the 90s to in early 2000s, when they're like, boom, random homophobic, racist, transphobic joke, just like, and then gloss right over it. This was the one. It's like a bingo card. Every time you're like, holy God, and why did that need to be there?
And it wasn't even either of the boys who said it. It was this landlady just randomly spewing something. And everyone's like, I'm like, what is happening?
I was like, excuse me, what part of the turf early internet were you on?
Yeah, ma'am, step back. So they're like, oh, can we have a moment alone to look at the alarm system? And she's like, yeah, sure. So she leaves and Dean brings out an EMF reader and picks something up. Like, it's the readings are off the chart. So they're like, yeah, this is our kind of gig.
Okay. Here's a question that I have, because in the next episode they go, oh, we can't really do the EMF readings correctly because we're near like, not a substation, a tower or something like that. And I'm like, you are in the middle of the city in this one and you're fine. So in a building that probably has some form of I'm like, how does this work? I just want to know.
It works. It's based on the plot. If the plot calls for it.
That's true. Also, during this conversation, they are flipping back and forth between talking about the case and also talking about Dean's sex life. And unfortunately, he did try to hook up with a cop. We don't know if he succeeded. But he's like, he's talking about...
He saw her tramp stamp. So.
Oh, yeah.
But to be fair, it was the early 2000s and everyone's pants were so low-rise, so that could have just been because it was there.
Yeah, like, we've seen several random women's tramp stamp in previous episodes already. Yeah, he talks about, like, seeing her tramp stamp, and then he starts it with that she's a Sagittarius, and I was like, most men would not remember that. He is an astrology girly.
He is. I think, Dean being like, Sam, what's your birth time? I need to make a birth chart for you.
Dean being like, oh yeah, we got our asses kicked because Mercury is in retrograde. And he's like, we've met God. What the fuck are you talking about?
Sam is like, shut up, please.
Dean is like, I don't believe in religion. However, Mercury is in Gatorade. So
he's like, silent. Sam is like, silence, bottom.
He knows that him and Castiel are their soulmates because Castiel is like, I'm an angel of the Lord, but that's real Sagittarius behavior.
Is Cass a Sagittarius? I think yes.
Oh, yeah. We don't really
absolutely,
have
a
canon birth date of Castiel.
But he acts like a Sagittarius.
I don't know. I think that's going to be a debate that we're going to have to debate on the supernatural internet of what sign is Castiel.
I think that's a good idea.
A Virgo, but that's just me because
I was okay. No, because I was also thinking Virgo. I feel like maybe he's a Virgo sun and like a Sagittarius moon.
Okay, yeah, because I'm like, remember when he was God and he was like, I am taking this very seriously.
He's getting things done.
He's getting things done, but it's like a little like, sir.
The two are looking around the apartment and there's blood splatters everywhere, and Dean is like, yeah, I checked with the police, and this is when he tells this salacious story about this woman that he saw. And he's like, yeah, I found out that her heart was also missing. And Sam's like, well, that's weird.
That's suspicious.
And
that's
then
weird.
Dean is like, hey, wait, hang on a minute. I need some masking tape. And he takes this masking tape and connects the dots, like the blood splatter dots, and they appear to be a symbol. And neither of them recognize this symbol. The symbol's quite important. So Sam and Dean go to the bar where Meredith worked. And they are going over their notes. And a big thing in this episode was that it was that two people had died of very similar causes in the last 2 months. So they're like, interesting. So they're comparing these two victims. One was just this older guy who was a banker. And one was Meredith, who is a young woman. And they can't tell anything. Like, they're trying to figure out what's in common. And then Dean is like, oh, well, Sam, we should... Sam just gets up in the middle of their conversation and walks away.
He, I fear, is neurodivergent.
Well, who does he see? A recurring character, besties. Do you remember in the episode Scarecrow, there was a woman named Meg? Meg went on that little road trip with Sam when he was like, I hate my brother. And then he was like, actually, I miss my brother. Meg was the woman who was with him, who also, if you'll remember, did slit a guy's neck and then use a bowl full of blood to talk to somebody.
Yeah, she's kind of Yasin Slay, though.
She's so Slay. I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah, so she immediately introduces herself by making a Chad Michael Murray reference when Sam is like, were you supposed to go to California? And she was like, oh, yeah, I gaslit a girl, gatekeeped our girl boss. And then she implies that she hooked up with Chad Michael Murray in L.A. And then Dean, like, coughs a little and she's like, rude, and I'm like,
no,
wow.
Okay, no,
Dean the anti-masker.
Dean coughs and she says, cover your mouth. And then he's like, no, this is my brother. She's like, oh, you're Dean? Ew, you should feel really bad because you treat your brother like luggage. And Dean's like, okay, now it's awkward, thank you, I'll just go stand over there.
I fear that Meg is also neurodivergent because she wasn't like supposed to, she wasn't like, oh, I'm just gonna hide it and try to like do my little plan or whatever. She was just like, you know what, maybe I'll be doing some family therapy in this bar right now.
She might be, but I think she's also just a bitch in a good way. Bitch honorary, like,
you
in
can
a good
do both
way. That is true. And you're right for that. And I was ignorant and I'm sorry. This is my apology. I'm leaving the podcast.
Ollie has been canceled.
I'm getting canceled. I'm so sorry, guys. Notes up, apology coming soon. So she immediately is like, oh, sorry that I ragged on your brother like that. I just hate the way you told me he treated you. And now you're back with him. And he's like, yeah, but you know, is what it is. We're working it out. And he's like, hey, but like, let's hang out sometime. And she's like, oh yeah, here's my number. We'll meet later. Sam and Dean leave this bar. And Dean is clearly a little cagey. Like, he's like, yeah, okay, whatever. Do you really think I treat you like that? And Sam is like, no, Dean, she was just, it was a weird time. And Dean's like, okay, whatever. So clearly Dean's upset.
But Dean Sam also like, she wasn't into me, and that's weird. And I'm like, that's because her gaydar is far stronger than everybody else's.
Dean is like, yeah, whatever, it's fine. But Sam is like, no. It's a little weird, don't you think, that, like, the last time I saw her, like, it was some random encounter, and the next time I see her is when there is a demon or some sort of monster killing people.
That's not correct.
He's like, that can't be right. That's so weird. And Dean is like, you know, coincidences do just happen. And he's like, yeah, but not to us. Main character syndrome is hitting him hard.
Chuck writing this must have been chuckling. He must have been chuckling.
He was chuckling.
He's writing this just tap, tap, having going, tee.
They split up, right? Sam is like, I'm going to go follow Meg and figure out what is happening with her. And Dean is like, I'm going to go to the library and look up Meg Masters, figure out what her deal is, and also research the symbol.
And he's also like, hey, Sam, like, that's a little creepy of you that you want to, like, and he's like, no, I'm trying to, like, stake out and figure out whatever. And he's like, sure, Jan. But then Sam ends up just being a creep.
Yeah, he literally does. He is just a creep.
This is Winchester privilege coming back, because if he wasn't, like, a handsome white guy, this would not... Although, somebody does come up to him on the street and is like, you fucking weird pervert.
But let me explain what happened. Yeah, he's literally, like, he's looking into her apartment window, and he's watching her, like, change. And he's watching her change, and some woman walks up next to him, and she goes, excuse me, sir. And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. No, you don't understand. She's like, okay, pervert, and walks away. I'm like, icon.
It's very slay.
But Sam sees her leave her apartment and goes into this factory, and he's like, well, that's weird. So he climbs up, like, a freight elevator shaft, and...
Damn, the upper body strength. Assassin's Creed, am I right?
Assassin's Creed, Sam.
I'm so sorry.
I've only played one Assassin's Creed game, so
I've never played any of them. I'm just being funny.
So he gets to the top just as she starts doing something, and he sees, like, this almost like an altar and a silver goblet that she's holding. She starts talking and is like, you shouldn't come, the brothers are in town. And then whatever happens, she's like, okay, I'll wait for you. Then she leaves, and Sam jumps up into the room and looks at the altar and sees this symbol, and it's the same one that they saw at the crime scene.
This scene and all the other scenes in this, like, warehouse area, I remember, like, viscerally. Like, as soon as it got to this part, I was like, oh, I know exactly where we are now in the story. Oh my god, yeah. Like, this is a core memory now. Like, this was when I was like, oh damn, is this show good? Like-
Later, they touch base, and Dean is like, two things. I have discovered that it is a Zoroastrian symbol, which represents, like, a demon of darkness, a deva, if you will. And it has to be conjured by an extremely experienced sorcerer. It's not something that you can just, like, do. Also, he looked up Meg and found, like, a bunch of history and records of her. So Meg Masters is her real name, and she's not some random person. But then Sam is like, cool, but I did see her communicate with someone, like, scrying, like witches do. So I don't really know what we want to do about that. And I also saw that same symbol at her altar. So what's going on with that? And Dean is like, Second thing, so funny, I did find a connection between the victims. They were both born in Lawrence, Kansas, which is where Sam and Dean were born. Dean is like, okay, whatever this is, it's got to be connected to Mom. Like, it's the demon. It's got to be the demon that killed Mom. And if Meg is, like, following you, Sam, it's connected to us. So, like, we need to call our dad. And we need to go to that altar. And Sam is like, well, she was calling someone and someone's going to show up there. Like, someone who wants us is going to show up. So Dean's like, awesome, let's go kill it. Let's call dad first. So he calls his dad and leaves a message and is like, hey, dad, I think we're really close to finding the thing that got Mom. So if you could come here, we're in Chicago. Thanks, bye. And then they're like, okay, let's do it. So they're getting ready to head out and they have this like, this conversation that really, really hit me. Like, usually when I'm watching the show, I'm like, oh man, that was emotional. This, I was like, oh, damn, that hurt.
Especially knowing the end.
Yes, exactly.
That shit hurted.
No, knowing what happens in the end made this so bad. But so they are getting ready to head out. And Sam is like, man, imagine if we get this done and we stop the demon that killed Mom and Jess. Like, I can, like, go back to college and, like, live my life. And Dina's like, well, like, why? Where are you gonna, what do you, like, you don't have to go. Things can just be, like, the same as they were. Why do you think I came and got you at college? Like, I didn't want to do this alone. I want to be a family again. And Sam's like, it can't be that way again. And he's like, well, it could. And Sam says, well, I don't want it to be that way again.
He says a part where, like, there's two things of, like, Sam says to Dean, what are you going to do when all this is over? And then me sitting there going, oh, no, he dies.
Yeah. And Sam also is like, Sam is like, Dean, eventually you're going to have to let me go off and, like, live my life. Like, and Dean is like, no, you know what? You're right. You should go after we finish this. I can't hold on to you forever. You need to go do your own thing. But it's never going to be over for me. For me, there's always going to be another monster. There's always going to be something else I need to stop.
Which, the last episode of Supernatural, we don't want to spoil it too much, even though we have many times. And it is not good, but the last, like, conversation that they have as Dean is, like, dying is basically that same conversation where he's like, Sam, you gotta let me go and you gotta live your life. So me watching this, I was like, I started crying. I was like, what, like, the fuck?
I watched it first and I texted Claudia. I was like, you're not gonna be okay.
No.
It's like literally the same conversation, but like in verse. I just,
Maybe it is like poetry rhymes, love. Like, maybe.
So they leave and they go to this factory, right? They climb up the elevator shaft and are kind of spying on Meg. And she's preparing her ceremony at her altar, and she's doing something, and they're trying to sneak around carefully, and Meg is like, oh, it looks like we have some guests. And Dean goes like, well, that, I thought we were going to be a lot more sneaky than that. It did not go as planned.
Very funny. Yeah. She's like, why don't you come out? And I'm like, oh, out of the closet.
Let's go, be who you are.
Yeah, Meg was like, come on, you can do it.
So she is like, cool, we were waiting for you guys. We knew you were coming.
We've been waiting at the fucking sorority TikTok.
We've been waiting all summer, and we're so happy you're here. So Sam is like, what do you mean you've been waiting for us? And then this shadow, the same shadow that we saw earlier take out Meredith, just beats the shit out of both of them, and they both blackout.
They saved a lot of money on CGI on this episode because they were like, yeah, we're just gonna show it in shadow. And you're like, nice.
So they wake up bound. They're both tied to poles, like not rafters, like support beams. And Sam is like, well, this was a trap. And she's like, yeah, it was a trap, no kidding, but not a trap for you.
And they're both like, oh, fuck.
For what? Shit. And she's like, hee, it was a trap for your dad because he's gonna come rescue his boys. So Dean is like, oh, well, it's gonna take a lot more than a bunch of shadows to kill our dad. And this is something that'll come into play later. But he's like, it's going to take a lot more than shadows to kill our dad. And she says, oh, well, this room is filled with devas. And the shadows are just the only parts that you can see of them. So they're not actually shadows. The shadows are just what you can see.
Then you're like, what?
Yeah.
It was giving very much Silence in the Library. The Super Hula Girlies had a point.
This part, Meg, your sleigh is ending. Your sleigh has ended abruptly.
Yeah, I'm no longer a Meg stan in this part because Meg, Girlie, they are both tied up and Meg is like, Meg, this is assault is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, she does lean in to give Sam a little kissy on the cheek. And he's like, oh, well, I'm all tied up. You can have me however you want. And she's like, okay, I will. So she starts kind of kissing on him.
Dean is like, what the fuck?
Dean is like, ew, girl, what? But he doesn't say anything. So the two of them are doing a weird little kissy.
Network television.
No, I find this abhorrent because obviously it is a violation of consent. However, I do fear that watching this scene did make me remember being deeply closeted watching this show and being like, oh, women. But it's again, still very bad.
Yeah.
But Meg, I'm obsessed with you.
But also, we knew that you'll see that, yeah. Sam and Dean, they were planning some things.
Yeah, they were playing 4D chess. Suddenly she hears something and she looks over and she's like, hey, Dean, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I just have a knife and I'm cutting my bonds. And she's like, oh, Slay, I'm going to take that from you. Sam, you were trying to distract me. And she walks over and he's like, actually, I have my own knife. And then he headbutts her and gets up because he cut his own bonds.
Yeah, it's very Slay of them to be. She's like, were you trying to distract me? And he was like, no, he was trying to distract me from me having a knife. And he was like, it's kind of like Looney Tunes comical, but it is kind of good.
Yeah. So Dean is like, Sam, get the altar, because he's headbutted her. She's like getting back up. Sam runs over and flips the altar over. And the Davis, the shadow creatures, the creatures who only appear as shadows, haul Meg out of this window where she falls supposedly to her death. So they're like, okay, Wig, we got it. We stopped the bad guy. Clearly a trap, clearly not what got our mom, but we stopped her now. So they're like, are all injured and they're bringing themselves back to their hotel room. And there's a guy in the hotel room. They turn the lights on, turns around. Who is it? But John Winchester, played by Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
It's also very funny because he's like, he's standing there in the dark for this like reveal. And like on the phone call, they say like, here's the address of the warehouse that we found. Come get us. And he's like, I'm not going to go to the warehouse. I'm going to find their hotel room, break in and stand in the shadows in the dark and just wait for them to show up. My sons, who I trained to be, have guns and be scared when there is someone in their room. I am going to jump scare them on purpose.
No, you know what? He was trying to figure out what they do in the shadows.
You're done. You're done.
So they have this reunion. And damn it, this show really does try to make you like John Winchester. And I fear sometimes it works just a little bit for me.
Yeah,
it's not, but
this is the part where they like dupe you into thinking that he's a good guy. And yeah, he's not.
Also, so they have this conversation and John hugs Dean and is like, I missed you. He goes up to Sam and he's like, listen, the last time we talked was on such bad terms, but I've missed you a lot and I would like to fix things with you and make it right. And after this kind of tense moment, they also hug.
I have to say, though, because he hugs Dean and then with Sam, he's like, hey, like, I haven't seen you in a while and we had this fight. He doesn't say sorry to Sam. He just says, it's been a while. They have like a tense moment and Sam is like, and he's like, yeah, it has been a while. And he's like, yeah. And then they like have a hug or whatever. And I'm like, no.
I mean, they do have a longer conversation than that. But also, like, sir, why have you not apologized?
He doesn't say sorry. And I'm like, I'm a John Winchester hater, so my eyes were motherfucking open during this.
I don't want anyone to think I'm a John Winchester apologist. So he's like, guys, I knew this was, I had a feeling it was a trap.
But I let my sons walk into it anyway. Look at that, you raggedy bitch.
But they, to be fair, they were also like, when did you show up? He's like, I saw the woman fly out of a window. I assume that was the bad guy, right? And they're like, yes, sir. That's the other thing. This entire confrontation, they do say, yes, sir. They call him sir, which I'm like,
I hate that.
No. Not happening.
And they're like, oh, well, because he was in the military and he made his kids do that. Yeah. That's fucking raggedy.
John is like, yeah, I knew that that was not the demon, but I am going to, we are going to find it, and I'm close, and I'm going to kill it, but I need to do it alone.
I gotta like, go my own way.
Like, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but we're going to work it out. And then the fun little devas, the demons.
Our little shadow besties.
The devas show up. They sneak into the hotel room and they start attacking. And Meg is shown outside of the hotel room, like on the ground outside on the street, shown to be alive, controlling them, just completely, completely uninjured. And she's using an amulet. This scene grinds my gears because they are being attacked from all around. There are all these shadows. And Sam is like, there are shadow demons, shadow beasts, right? Let me light them up. And turns on a flare to dispel them. Which works. And I'm like, in the scene directly prior to this, did Meg not say, they're not actually shadows, that's just what you can see. Like, the light should not have done anything.
It's literally, Chuck was like, you know what? This is a funny line, so I'm going to put it in and I'm going to say that it works. I'm going to say
okay.
And you know what? Maybe this was all still part of her 4D chess plan and that they were just pretending that it worked. I don't know.
They stagger out of the hotel. And Sam is like, come on, Dad, get in the car. You've got to get in the car. We got to go. And Dean's like, no, he shouldn't come with us. Sam's like, what? We're probably safer together. He's like, no, we almost got him killed back there because they're using us to get to him. He's safer by himself. And Sam is like, well, I don't know about that, but I guess you're right. And John is like, but you guys are very hurt. And they're like, we'll be fine. But if you die, it's all over. You got to go. So John gets in his own car and drives like 100 miles an hour. Then Sam and Dean get in a car and go like a different direction. And Meg sees Sam and Dean go, but I don't think she sees John leave.
Yeah, and, I believe so.
And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, this moment was, it was very much like Batman-like where it's like, the only way to protect you is if you're not with me. Even though it's not going to work. That never works, ever. In any fiction, and I don't know how they're not just gonna figure out that you guys separated for that. It was very much like, we have to figure out a way to not have to have Jeffrey Dean Morgan on every episode. That's what I kept thinking the whole time. To this next episode, Hell House, which you would think is like, oh, we're back to Monster of the Week. However, it introduces some very important characters to the supernatural mythos that at the time of watching this, you may not know that they're very important, but they are some of the most important. This episode is another one of those, hey, if we're establishing a world where there are real life monsters and demons, this thing would probably happen and what would the fallout be of it? And it's one of those episodes, and that's why I think it's a very good one. It both introduces some of the best side characters and also introduces a concept that a lot of Supernatural is based on and that they kind of never touch on ever again.
Yeah, so, I mean, they kind of do, but not like in the same words that they use.
Not really. So this episode is called Hell House. It opens with this group of teenagers. It's like 2 months before. They're in Texas, and they're going to visit this like dilapidated haunted house in the middle of a field. And there's four of them, and you know, it's a bit Goonies-like. Although they're not Goonies-like. They're teenagers, so they're older. And they're like, there's something in here. And the guy who has been telling them the tale, the the tale of why this is haunted. He's been like, oh yeah, it's haunted, and it gets girls, it gets women every time, and then you find them strung up, whatever, and he's like telling this to freak people out, and of course there's only one girl in the group, etc. And everyone's like, and he's like, yeah, they say that, whatever. And one of the kids is like, they? Who's they? And he's like, oh, my cousin, like, she told me. And they're like, well, who told her? And he's like, I don't know, like, people. And it's very funny, but it will come into play later. So they're like bopping around, they're like, see, there's something in here. And of course they say the most stereotypical horror movie, white people in a horror movie thing, which is one guy going, I don't see anything scary, and then they turn around and there's a woman hung behind them, and it's extremely fucked up.
Yeah, and it's very creepy.
It's very creepy.
And they're like, ah!
Yeah, but however, by the time the police arrive, the body is missing.
Crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. So then we cut to the current day, and we have Sam and Dean. So they are in a bit of a prank war. And we cut to them in the car. Dean is not looking at the road. He is taking photos with his fucking flip phone of Sam asleep with a spoon on his nose.
This scene is so funny because Sam is like falling asleep in the car, and Dean has this like plastic spoon, I guess like from some like fast food place or whatever, and he just kind of puts it in Sam's mouth. Yeah. And then he starts taking pictures of him on his flip phone while he's driving.
Yeah, and you're like, sir,
he's driving a car that for sure has a stick, like, sir, keep your hand.
They never really address that the Impala is definitely stick. It has to be.
There's a part where Sam is like, oh, you want to see what I can do? We can throw down. We can have a little prank war. Just remember that. You're going to be sorry. And Dean's like, oh, you want me to put Nair in your shampoo again, Baldy?
They're like, so he's like, okay, we're about to get to this town. Can you give me the lowdown again of the case? And he's like, yeah. So basically there's been this pretty misogynistic spirit, which I believe that should be the tagline of the show.
The misogynistic spirit is the energy that the writers are bringing into the studio.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, it's been killing women, and they're like, we're going to track down this guy named Craig. Before they go in, though, Dean is like, where did you find out about this ghost and the spirit? And Sam's like, oh, you know, around. And he's like, what do you mean around? And he's like, okay, so I went on this website. It's called hellhoundslair.com. And Dean is like, you were on fucking website forums. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And he's like, okay, but I think, like, it's clearly connected to something real. Like, whatever. And Dean's like, whatever the fuck. By the way, if you go to hellhoundslayer.com, it redirects to the CW website.
Very scary. Truly, truly terrifying.
Jump scare. Anyways, so, yeah, Sam was like, yeah, I go on internet forums. And Dean's like, what the fuck? This is why you're a fucking nerd. And so they go into a record They go into a record store.
And something to keep in mind, the person they're looking for is Craig Thurston. Craig was the kid in the cold open who was kind of leading the other teenagers down into the house and being like, my cousin told me this story, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So this is a period piece because this is a record store in 2006. and Craig is working in this record store, and they're like, hey, we're local reporters. And Craig is like, oh, I'm a writer too. I write for my school paper. And I'm like, look at you, gaslighting a girl, bossing, trying to get yourself an internship. All right. But also, the 2008 recession is coming. Do not work in journalism.
hindsight's 2020, baby.
Craig, no.
Craig, stop.
That's the real tragedy in this episode. They're like, hey, so we want to write a story about like local hauntings, and we heard that you knew about this story. And Craig's like, okay. And he's like, okay, so I really only know it because my cousin Dana told me. And he talks about this guy named Mordecai Murdoch, who lived in that house, who was a farmer. He lived in the house during the Depression. And basically, instead of watching his daughter starve to death because they had no money, he decided to just out and kill them one day because it would be faster.
And then hangs them in the cellar to spare them from starving to death. I don't know why the hanging. Don't know why the hanging.
Spooky.
Yeah. You'll see why later, sort of. So they're like, great. Thanks for telling us this weird fucking story. And he's also being very dramatic and very specific, as if he was, like, there. And you're like, sir, you just, like, heard this from somebody. Like, why are you being, like...
Are you Mordecai Murdoch, my friend?
Yeah, are you descended from Mordecai? Like, what the fuck? So they're like, okay.
He's the son of the daughters he couldn't hang.
You're done. You're done. So they go to this freaky little house, and there's there's an electricity tower outside the house, and so like, okay, well, EMF readings are gonna be off, so guess we just gotta motherfucking wing it. And they go in the house, and they're like, they're looking around, and they're like, okay, there's some graffiti in here. And Dean's like, okay, maybe the cops.
I wrote this line down. They're seeing these symbols, and Sam is like, this story was so specific, like, this doesn't feel like real. And Dean is like, yeah, I hate to agree with authority figures of any kind, but the cops might be right about this one not being real, because when the cops showed up initially, the body was gone, so they thought it was a bunch of kids playing a prank. Yeah. So Dean's like, yeah, maybe I hate to say it, but maybe the cops were right this one time.
And in the previous episode, he hooked up with a cop, so I'm like, Dean, you are not escaping the allegations.
He is gaming the system.
You are not escaping the allegations, Dean. You're on thin ice. You're on thin ice.
Dean also has that same when he's looking at one of the symbols. He's like, I swear I have seen this symbol before.
They go in and... they go in and they're going around and they're like, what the fuck is this? And they hear a sound and they're like, the fuck? Like, oh my god, is there a ghost here right now? And it's like during the day. And they're like, what? And they go into another room and there are these two, and remember, Sam and Dean are like 6 feet, 7 feet tall. And there's these two, like,
7 feet tall.
Whatever.
Just like Bruno from Encanto. 7 foot frame. Rats along his back, because there's a part of this episode where they do open a door and a bunch of rats come out, and Dina's like, I hate rats. I wish it was a ghost instead.
Yeah, Sam like jumps back and he's like, ah, I could have dropped my croissant. It's still fucking rats. It's very funny. So they see these like two like short, nerdy looking guys with a bunch of like video equipment and EMF readers and whatever. They are clearly traditional ghost hunters. Shout out to BuzzFeed Unsolved.
They wish they were BuzzFeed Unsolved.
No, BuzzFeed Unsolved wishes they were the Ghost Facers. Like,
that is what they will be. Spoiler alert, these may be recurring characters who come to be known as the Ghost Facers, but that's not who they are yet. They haven't reached that part in their story.
So, their names are Ed and Harry, and they have quite...
We gotta talk about their last names, though.
What are their last names?
Their names are Ed Zedmore and Harry Spangler. Ed Zedmore. Zedmore is the same name as Winston Zedmore from Ghostbusters, and Egon Spangler, also from Ghostbusters. So they really said, we're making ghost hunters in this episode, and we're gonna name them after the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, and they do make a Ghostbusters joke later. Chuck was having a real laugh right in this one. This is some of the best supernatural lore right here. They are paranormal investigators, and they are like, yeah, we run the website called Hellhound's Lair. And Dean is like, Sam, what the fuck? Like, clearly this is
Sam. Getting your shit from.
Sam's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Boo.
But they do have this very funny scene where both Sam and Dean kind of gaslight them. And they're like, oh, like, so, like, what do you do? And they're like, so we use this thing called EMF. And Sam's like, oh, what's EMF? They're like, they're kind of entering their bitchy era.
No, they are kind of funny. I'm telling you, Sam and Dean spend this whole episode like pranking each other. And I'm like, if only you guys had a normal upbringing, you would have been the best high school bullies ever.
But to be fair, I do believe that Ed and Harry are those kind of people where you're like, you know, we don't throw people into lockers enough anymore.
I fear they are. They're suffering from terminal band kid syndrome.
And they're terminally online, unfortunately.
They're chronically online.
And they're online in 2006, which is also when I was making my like Twilight fan websites with my friends. So
they could have gone on your Twilight fan websites.
Yeah, well, all Dean Winchester also. they're gaslighting these guys, and they're like, yeah, sure, Jan. And and at the end, and Sam and Dean are like, okay, and they're like, we're gonna leave. And
yeah, they're like, y'all are goofy, goodbye.
Yeah. And they, at the end of this scene, the ghost phasers are like, sorry we were being just silly little guys. That pot we smoked gave me the giggles. Number one, that makes him sound like a cop. But number two, the fact that they went ghost hunting high and then they meet real ghost hunters. Like, it's very the layers. The layers here. It's
It really is giving 2006.
Yeah. And okay, so then of course they go back to get into the car. Dean gets in the car and he turns on the car and the captions say loud Spanish music playing.
It is maybe the loudest music I've ever heard, because yeah. I did have to take one of my headphones and I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, Sam has basically turned up Santa's like turned it up all the way to like give him a jump scare, and he's like, damn. But he's like, you can't get me. That was nothing. That was amateur hour or whatever. So yeah. Then they cut to, it is nighttime, and there is another group of teens outside this house. And I believe it's like two girls and a guy or whatever. They're clearly playing truth or dare. And they're like, okay, you either have to go into the house and get something from Farmer Mordecai's basement, or you have to kiss this dude. And she is like clearly a lesbian, and she... she is like,
later we find out she gets straight A's in school, lesbian behavior.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not doing all that. And so she goes in and she's like, yeah, fuck it. And right after that, they're like, would you have taken that dare? And both of them are like, no, absolutely not.
I'm like, okay, she's a girl boss.
Yeah, she's kind of a girl boss. She goes in, and unfortunately, she does pass away.
Yeah, we do see this very creepy, messed up farmer looking guy. Hang her.
Yeah, and he's like a solid being and not just like ghosty, and you're like, what's all that about? So then the next night, Sam and Dean, they return, and they're like, okay, we're gonna check out the house. And of course, it is cordoned off by police because another person has died there. And they're like, what the fuck? Okay, we gotta sneak in, whatever. They're in the bushes. And they spot the fucking ghost facers in the woods. Who are like, clearly came back. And like, and Dean shouts out, who are you gonna call? And the ghost facers are like, huh?
He says that so that the police who are at the house will know there's someone there. So the police come after and see them. So then Sam and Dean have an opening to sneak in. It's Sam, so iconic.
Your praxis, though, it's not good.
No, Dean's praxis is at level zero.
Whack. Yeah, he gets
his waxes.
They go into the basement. And then, of course, they do kind of the same thing that the kids have done, and Dean's like, tee-hee-hee-hee-hee. Sam, I dare you to drink something out of one of these gross little jars. And Sam's like, fucking grow up. Like, it's very funny. They're going around and they see the spirit of Mordecai, and he like tries to chase them out of the house, and they're like, they're shooting it with rock salt, which usually works on ghosts, and it is not working. And Dean's like, what the fuck? And they break down the door. They run past the ghost facers. Basically, Ed and Harry are like out in the open. They catch Sam and Dean running the fuck out of there, and they see and they catch Mordecai, the supposed ghost, on camera before the police are like, you're done. You're done. Why are you here?
What are you doing here?
And they say one of their most iconic lines that became one of like the biggest, like, wow, Supernatural has a gift for everything, which is, sweet Lord of the Rings.
I love, like, millennials.
Truly, it's one of the most, this is millennial core. I was like, I would have that on a shirt that's like, you know, those shirts that were like the Hunger Games logo and the Deathly Hallows logo and a ring from the Lord of the Rings and the like and a lightsaber and like and the Doctor Who sonic screwdriver and then the anti-possession tattoo from Supernatural. Yeah. It would have all those things, maybe spelling out the word coexist and then underneath it. Sweet Lord of the Rings, this is Millennial Core. Did you know that exists? It does. I could find it right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Coexist is too much.
Like, all of you bitches are like, oh, I'm bringing back the 2000s fashion. Okay, where are your ugly Henleys and then your Uggs with the little thingies in them and then you know, some t-shirt that you had screen printed that had, you know, all of your fandom spelling out coexist on it, like, where is it? Quickly, that is 2000s core.
No, and you're so right for that.
Or even early 2010s core, to be honest, like, oh boy.
I think the word you're looking for is millennial core.
Yeah, unfortunately it is.
You need to take credit for your people.
Excuse me?
Are you going to now tell me that you're not a millennial anymore? You've given up on that lifestyle?
Yeah, I've actually given up on that lifestyle. I'm going clean.
Going cold turkey on being a millennial?
No more reaction gifts. No more... No more small boys. No more doggo. No more nasty woman. I'm... anyways, so they go back to the motel and they're trying to work out what happened. And there's another kind of transphobic joke, but it's also kind of like, Sam, are you trans?
Yeah. Yes. If they had made that joke now, they would have had to give Jared Padalecki top surgery.
Yeah, because Dean goes, doesn't this joke only go after chicks? And then he goes, like, that explains why he went after you, Sam. And you're like
Dean, oh, come on now.
He's either being transphobic or he's very accepting of his
Listen,
sibling.
I'm choosing to believe every time Dean says something deeply upsetting, I'm just going to choose to believe that it's him being so progressive, he's trying to make people who might be more regressive uncomfortable.
Yeah, he's
that's
just
my new headcanon.
Yeah, he's just a mean gay person who's laughing amongst other gay people.
As I was saying before, they're also like, okay, there were all these changes to the spirit is not, spirits usually follow patterns and this one's not. Like, this spirit had slit wrists, which it didn't before. That wasn't a part of the legend. And the story on the website has changed as if, like, you know, it's going through telephone of different people writing and talking about it. And he finally recognizes the symbols that were painted inside the house. So he's like, you know what? We need to go back and go visit Craig back at the records shop. And so they go.
This part is slay.
This part is Dean absolutely slaying. Dean goes up to him and he's like, it's really interesting. I recognized a symbol, and it's from a band called Blue Oyster Cult, and it's on their album cover. So what's the truth? And Craig is like, yeah, so terrible news. I was just doing a funny haha. Interestingly, pranks are a big part of this episode. Again, this is another common, like, Monster of the Week thing where it's like, we're covering, and especially in season one, we are covering something that would be quite plausible in a world with supernatural people, and also we're going to use what's happening around them to parallel what is happening with the brothers. So he's like, yeah, so I was just, like, fucking around with my cousin, and we thought it'd be really funny if we went into this house that everybody thought was haunted, and we took some random symbols from, like, album covers and my cousin's theology textbook, and we painted them all over, and then we took, like, the creepy little pictures, and we put it on the internet, and we told people, and we put it on the internet, and we just like spread it as a rumor, and like we you know, tell this story about this guy named Mordecai, like as a prank, and he's like, we didn't, and so then some people actually fucking died, and we were like, what the fuck is that? This was all just a joke. I don't want anything to do with this. I don't understand. Yeah. And then Dean and Sam are like, okay, well, all of this being a joke does not explain how real fucking people died. This is very scary.
And something else that Craig makes a point of saying is, like, he was like, oh, yeah, we were just, like, talking about it, and I posted about it online. But then this stupid website picked it up and then made it a big thing. And, like, I just thought it was, like, a funny joke, but now they're talking about it like it's a real haunting.
It's really about the dangers of the internet, which that is also – that is the tagline – of this episode is
the poison of the information age.
No, literally, it is Sam and Dean discover the power of the internet, which is quite ironic considering what the internet did to Supernatural. Sam and Dean discover the power of the internet. That could go several ways. So it's
don't let them go into fanfiction.net and search Supernatural. It's not good.
Especially at that time before Castiel.
Not good. Not good, guys.
Uh-oh. It's not good. At this point, and they're like, okay, shit. Okay, what is it going to be? So, they have a scene here. This is also the Sam shirtless episode that all the Sam girlies like myself, we were obsessed with. He just basically, Dean, when Sam is in the shower, Dean is like, I'm going to take itching powder. He's like, I'm going to take itching powder and put it all over his clothes and I'm going to fuck with him. And he's like, okay. And then Sam walks out of the shower looking excellent and is like, hey, Dean, whatever. And Dean's like, and then in later scenes you see him being like, why am I so itchy? And Dean's like, ha 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 ha. In the middle of them explaining, or Sam's like, okay, well, so I think this Mordecai guy is a tulpa, which is the manifestation of a thought. He tells this story about these Tibetan monks that like all meditated about this one thing, and they made it appear because they all, like, they manifested.
It's hashtag manifestation.
Literally hashtag manifestation. But he says, he's like, I looked at some of the pictures of the sigil that was on the website, and one of them was a Tibetan symbol, one that's used by monks like this to, like, to meditate and to, like, center energies. And he's like, so what I'm thinking is that this story was posted online. It had the sigil. Everybody's looking at the sigil, thinking about this guy, and they have manifested it into reality. And he's like, if only some people did it in, like, the town, it would be different. But they posted it online, and it's thousands and thousands of people looking at it and concentrating and learning about it and thinking about it all the time. And he's like, that would explain why the story changes every time people share different things about the legend or the story on the forums and on the website. And it's basically concentrating mental energy on the internet. So they're like, okay, well, fuck, how do you kill a thought with cognitive behavioral therapy?
Very true. And that's something that the other girlies won't tell you.
Yeah. So he does say, how do we kill an idea? Which is very funny to me because later they do kill God. It's very funny. So they're like, okay, I have an idea. They go find the ghost facers in their little fucking, in their little
weed den.
Their little trailer. And the ghost facers, they're like having an existential fucking crisis because they're like, we have an obligation to our fans. Like, do we post this footage of this thing? Like, what do we do? Whatever. And Sam and Dean are like, hey, you saw what we saw. Here's what it is. Yes, it's real. You need to edit your website to that it says that it can be killed with, what does he say? That it can be shot with rounds and that will kill him so that people start to think that and that it manifests, so people manifest that into reality. And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, we're not gonna print fake news. And they're like, no, literally people are gonna die
if you don't print fake news. That is the plot of this episode. If you don't print fake news, and then everyone manifests it. It's kind of like how Fox News works, where like if they just say something enough times, everyone starts believing it, and then it becomes the truth. And what terms mean, like how they redefine the term critical race theory in this essay I will. It's actually quite similar. It's about the power of belief, one might say. And it's very funny because in an earlier part of this episode, when Sam is explaining this to Dean, Sam's like, okay, so why isn't Santa real? And he's like, well, yeah, a lot of kids believe in it and whatever, whatever. And he's like, well, because you're a bad person. But he's like, but also because, like, there was this very specific thing of, like, concentrating everybody's energies with this fucking sigil that is, like, about doing that. So they're like, fine, we'll do it. We'll edit our website, whatever. And they're like, okay, we'll wait a couple hours until enough people have seen it and manifested it and whatever. And then we're going to go back to the house. Awesome, we're gonna kill this mother.
And the story that they have told them to edit on the website is that being shot with iron rounds will kill him, and he's terrified of firearms.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Mordecai's so scared of guns. So true. As he should be.
It's very much and I came to my D&D party and I said, I brought a gun. it's quite funny. So finally they go to the house and they're like, okay, but manifested it. We can kill this thing with a gun. And fucking Ed and Harry, the Ghostbusters
are there. They okay. would have handled it.
Yeah. The Ghostbusters, they would have handled it. The woman Ghostbusters, they would have handled it. The Ghostfacers are there and they're like, hey guys, our server crashed because so many people have been on our fucking website. So I don't think that the new legend is going to manifest because I don't think enough people saw it before our website went down. And they're like, oh shit. And they're like, okay, so we can't shoot it. And so Dean's like, concept, what if we just set the house on fire and then there's no more sigil? And if there's no more house, he doesn't have any house to haunt. And I'm like, why haven't they done that more often earlier?
Well, to be fair, setting a whole house on fire is okay, quite challenging.
They've been in dilapidated, abandoned houses several times. And Sam is like, are you sure about that? And he's like, yeah. Like, what the fuck else are we gonna do? And they're like, okay, that kind of makes sense. And he's like, that part of the legend that he lives in that house and he haunts it isn't gonna exist. So whatever. And then they have a conversation that has some just wide-ranging effects. They're standing on the hill like watching this house burn, and Sam like kind of turns to Dean and he's like, you know, it really makes you wonder, of all the monsters that we've hunted, like how many of them do you think exist just because people believe in them? And Dean's like, we don't have time to unpack all of that.
Dean's like, Sam, please stop saying things.
He's
please.
Like, that is a problem for later, me. And then they, like, never address it again.
Well, it makes me think. I'll think about it. You know, maybe the real supernatural entities are the friends we made along the way.
No, and I remember watching this part and being like, my mind was, like, genuinely blown. I was like, that is such a cool thing.
I mean, there's also a commentary on being like, oh my god, because their dad has been so crazy about hunting this demon, did that give it more power than it would have? Would be really cool to see them cover it again.
It would, but Supernatural never really, it never really does that.
Oh my god, Supernatural, come to a fulfilling conclusion challenge.
They do touch on this when they work with pagan gods very badly, when they often work with pagan gods badly. They touch on this when they're like, oh yeah, they're not as powerful anymore. Or I think in that one pagan god episode they talk about it where they're like, you know, yeah, it's because people don't believe in us as much anymore, so they don't give us sacrifices and whatever, so we don't have as much power. That is also a big thing in Percy Jackson of like, we only have as much power as people believe in us. And I love that when you're talking about urban fantasy. Yeah. I think it's a very cool concept and it's very Yas and very Slay.
I agree.
So they come out and they burn this house down, and they talk to the ghost facers, and the ghost facers are like, yeah, so we just got off the phone with a producer, and after we posted our clip with the clip that crashed our website,
And we are in talks for a book and a movie and an RPG. And Dean goes, what's an RPG? And they're like, a role-playing game. I'm like, Dean, you know what Dungeons & Dragons is. Please, you fucking dweeb. And they go, we're just trying to get a book and a movie deal. And I'm like, that was kind of meta of them. We never got our Supernatural movie, did we? We just get this shit.
Not yet.
Please, no, no more.
Listen, I'm just saying, we could still get the Destiel honeymoon movie.
Please. The person that I would become.
The Destiel in Heaven honeymoon movie? Wait a minute. HBO Max, at me.
Yeah, so they're walking away from the Ghost Facers, and then Dean is like, do you really think they got a call from a Hollywood freezer? And Sam's like, so actually, that was me. I was fucking with them, and I was the Hollywood producer, and I was like,
no, high school bully behavior, because the Ghost Facers didn't do anything to deserve that. That was so messed up, Sam.
Yeah.
That was fucked up.
Yeah. Of course, on the Supernatural Wiki, it says, the boys call a halt to their own prank war for now, and it's very funny. It's very funny to me. I just have to say, Chuck really went insane right in this one. He really popped off.
He said, let's have fun with this one.
Yeah, he was like, I'm going to introduce some crazy shit here. And again, for those who are listening, Chuck is he's God. He's God.
And you'll learn about him
later. You'll learn how they basically canonized the fact that God has been writing their story the whole time. It's a little crazy. Yeah, so between these two episodes, we have crazy plot heavy and then crazy, like, overall lore heavy, and also, like, introducing pretty important side characters. And one might say, how are the Ghost Facers important to the overall plot? They're not. They're just, like, important to the lore. They're just, like, there.
You will see. They're surprisingly important.
Yeah. They also have one of my favorite gifts that people did use. People did use when Destiel became canon. One of the Ghost Facers looks straight into the camera in another episode, and he goes, and gay love will pierce through the veil of death and save the day.
So true.
And that is not what happened to Castiel, unfortunately.
You know what? It is in my heart.
Yeah, it is in my heart. I mean, so it's quite funny, and everyone was using that. So the Ghost Facers, they're everything to me.
Yeah, the Ghost Facers are slay.
Yeah. Ollie, do you have any final thoughts on either of these episodes?
The only final thought I have is I think that we need to cosplay the Ghost Facers.
Oh, absolutely.
Because is that not just our podcast?
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening. We appreciate your continued support. If you're interested in hearing more from us, or for more Supernatural content from us, follow us on social media. We're at Mystery Spotcast on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. You can also ask us Supernatural questions on our TikTok Q&A, or if you don't have TikTok, you can just email us at themysteryspotcast@gmail.com. If you have enjoyed listening to us suffer, please rate and review our show. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, Overcast. It really helps people find us. We really appreciate it. If you want to hear more of us, we are also hosts on RuPaul's Pod Race, a queer Star Wars podcast, which can be your perfect companion for the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, which has recently started. See you two Tuesdays from now for more slaying people, queer baiting things, the supernatural business.